Last time on the Weebcast.
Remember, kids, don't do drugs, because otherwise you'll start liking this podcast.
Canada, Tootsie Roll!
The system has failed, and I will fix it.
Shut the fuck up, Corbo, you weren't there! You didn't know!
Jordan tells me, I want those sexy kids.
Dude, did you get hacked? There's something wrong with your Facebook. It's like sending us pictures of anime porn.
Sorry.
I'm gonna game end all those fucking Jews in Minecraft. I don't know how y'all niggas can, fuck women that have had abortions. That pussy haunted, Nick.
Libraries are just where black people go to jerk off. I don't know what you're talking
about. What the?
Tone's done, like 100 episodes of this show. Don't you think he would have learned through rote by now?
No.
Hello, welcome to the Weebcast. I am Tone, and today I am joined by Joseph Nadaslav.
Yeah, it's that guy with the good opinions. What's up, everybody?
Frig.
What it be, what it do, kill women.
Based. Alright, Miles Poland from the Godcast.
What's going on, lads?
Jejun, the number one Corbo fan.
Yes, I am the first member of the Corbo crew.
And Cyril Seamonster, the Tokolosh himself.
Oh, that's up, guys.
And today we are going to talk about Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex, which is an anime. Would anyone like to give a brief description of...
Ghost GFWOTWOT.
Would anyone like to give a brief description of Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex, or should I do it?
I've got the Wikipedia open, so that should suffice. The series takes place in the year 2030, where many people have become cyborgs with prosthetic bodies. Primarily set in the fictional Japanese city of Nihama in Nihama Prefecture, the series follows the members of the Public Security Section 9, a special operations task force made up of former military officers and police detectives. While the group investigates various crimes, both seasons feature ongoing investigations into two incidents that embroil the group in corruption with other branches of the Japanese government.
Wow. That description is more boring than the one on the back of the DVD box right here.
That is certainly true.
Yeah. So Ghost in the Shell, yeah, it's a spin-off. It's not a sequel or in any way really related to the original movie or the manga. It's its own thing that came out in the early 2000s. And a lot of people like it, but I've seen a lot of people shit on it too. A lot of people say it's like a Ghost in the Shell for retards. What does everyone think? How do you guys feel on the show?
It's not as good as the movie, but it's still pretty good.
Joe is muted. Miles, how about you?
I really enjoyed the show. There wasn't, because of the time constraints of the movie, they couldn't cram as much stuff in, and they did have to stretch it out a little bit to make up for the budget. You know, I mean, these things are made to sell DVDs and advertisements. So you have the core plot in the first and second seasons, and then you have side plots that get handled. And overall, I thought it was really great. But yeah, like Cyril said, it wasn't as intellectually or philosophically deep as the movie was. But I don't think that's a bad thing.
I'm gonna say this. Don't get mad. I actually like this a lot more than the movie. I think the episodic format lets them do a lot more. It lets them introduce a lot of interesting concepts. And overall, I just really loved it. It's you get a lot of interesting science fiction concepts and moral dilemmas that come with them. And overall, I thought that was really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the series, they do there's more philosophical questions being asked, but it's not of the same depth as in the movie.
Yeah.
And also, they had sort of technical constraints or budgetary constraints, so it doesn't the movie is shot for shot excellent. The series, it doesn't have that. There's still scenes that are very good. I think especially of the first episode. But overall, it is a drop in quality compared to the movie. But I mean, it's a series. What do you expect?
Yeah, I think there's some episodes that... Let me let me qualify a little more. I think some episodes are better than the movie, but some episodes really drag on, especially in season two. I would consider season two a really big drop in quality. I didn't rewatch it before doing this, but I remember hating it. Yeah, it's really dumb.
I'll say this much. I've seen 13 episodes of Standalone Complex, but in terms of like story and stuff like that, I enjoyed more than the movie because I thought the movie was like very... It's the director's style. I forgot what his name was. It was like Masamune or something. But his style is like very dry and like slow and I don't remember the movie's plot very engaging me.
Yeah, like honestly, I can't even remember the movie that well. I think that this one overall just... I think it appeals to a broader demographic is the best way to describe it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tern calling himself a broader demographic.
That's fine. So the main story of the show, there's a couple. Like the main plot is about this like weird dude called like the Laughing Guy.
Laughing Man.
And I think it's like memes. I think it's a meme thing. I don't know what they were going for, but it was pretty cool. It's a kind of corporate espionage kind of thriller thing. You know, it's pretty neat. I kind of, to be honest, though, it was kind of cringy at times. Like, I would describe it how, like, those Guy Fawkes anonymous faggots in, like, the early 2000s saw themselves.
Well, that's pretty much the most accurate thing that we can compare it to, at least that anyone in our audience would actually understand.
Yeah.
It's very much like that. It's a someone who just stumbled across something and decided to take action, which is a lot like Anonymous and the Chanology thing going up against Scientology.
Yeah, except for like less gay.
Well, less memey at the very least. But then again, I mean, the Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex is a television show, and it presents things in the way it wants to be perceived. Meanwhile, you know, Chanology isn't real life. I'm sure you can make a really, really good, like, television show or whatever that portrayed, like, Anonymous going up against Scientology as being, like, dramatic and cool rather than, you know, kind of gay.
Yeah.
Like, we're not going to get a bit of the Laughing Man, like, jerking it to Futanari porn, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so our impression of him is not colored by him being a real character or him being a real person.
God, the Major is so fucking hot.
That too.
Am I right, fellas?
I think that's one of the most memorable things about this show is just how fucking hot the Major is. Like,
I mean, the guy who made the manga, like, mostly draws porn for a living.
Yeah. Well, he made the Major a chick because he didn't want to draw a dude's ass when they were fucking.
Yeah, he, so the story goes is that there was a planned sex scene in the Ghost in the Shell manga, and he said, you know what, I'm not drawing any dude's ass, so he just made her a chick. Yeah, and the implication throughout the entire thing is that no one's entirely sure who the Major is or what's going on or who she was in the past. That gets explored a little bit more in
in season two.
It's not answered completely, but it's more or less confirmed that she was a young girl when she had the full body prosthetics put in place.
Yeah. All those like faggots that think the Major was a tranny BTFO.
Yeah.
I fucking
nope, not a tranny, just a dog.
I've seen those people and I'm like, dude, you are like the gayest nigga in the planet.
Well, there was the line from, I think it was Standalone Complex, the first season, where Bato asks, well, why don't you just get a male chassis? You know, there's more room so you can fit better performance enhancement stuff in it. And she says, well, that's not my style. I don't need one. I don't need it.
Yeah, I mean, like, I call them faggots, but, like, there is a little bit to that, but also it's gay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was also in response to Bato saying something about, well, she was chastising him about using too much force or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back with, if she wants him to be more effective, she should just use a male body because that would be stronger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, the dig was more at, like, her choice of equipment than at, like a actual sexuality.
Yeah, being ill-suited to the task at hand.
Yeah. Speaking of Bato, what did you guys think of the various characters? I thought it was, I don't know, they were kind of more emphasized in this. I think the Major was the only one that mattered in the movie. You have, what's his fucking name? The cop guy.
Togusa?
Togusa. Yeah, you had Togusa. I'm really bad at these Japanese names. You had Togusa, which I think is... That's a pretty standard thing you see in anime. It's like a... When you have characters like the Major and everyone else that are just like weird robots, you gotta have a more human element. And I think that that's what his role is. And he comes off as one of the most interesting characters in the show, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, interesting and relatable, which is exactly what he's meant to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought Bato was...
Go ahead, Joe.
I thought Bato was a great character, especially in his like little standalone episode. What was it? Jungle Killers or something like that. It's one where they're hunting the serial killer that skins like women alive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I thought he was great in that episode, and he's just a great presence in the show in general.
Yeah. He almost beats the shit out of a CIA nigger in that episode. It's great. One of the things I've noticed about this show, especially the third time I've seen it, is that there's a lot of like hostility towards other countries. It's like every criminal is like from outside the country. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, the Japanese would never do anything wrong except when they're being played by other countries.
Yeah,
there's a very nationalistic bent to this.
Yeah. Except for the part where they start killing Japanese soldiers. At the end, that was pretty weird.
But to get back to Bato, I really liked his sort of little arc in this, where he starts giving the Tachikomas natural oil, and they sort of start developing personalities, which probably doesn't actually have anything to do with the natural oil. And then the Major sort of tells him that this is... like they've developed too far and they have to go in. They have to sort of be disarmed and taken back to the lab. And then there's this great episode where Bato has to deal with this like boxer guy who was like, I think he was a silver medalist at the Olympics or something. And he's teaching some part of the Japanese army boxing. Or martial arts in general. And Bato actually like befriends this guy and eventually finds out he's corrupt. And there's this great scene where he throws this guy's wife gave him like a gift of some kind of liquor. And he throws the liquor and the natural oil like both into the trash. Like that whole like character arc of his was really great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the liquor was meant for his wife because he was trying to arrest this guy, so he made up a backstory. His backstory was he had a wife, and so it kind of shows he has nothing. He doesn't have a wife. He doesn't have a robot. Everyone around him.
Yeah, and that's like a great juxtaposition with the boxer guy.
Yeah,
like the boxer guy is corrupt and is doing stuff off of books to try to get money. But he has a wife who loves him. He had a successful career. Like, he had something to show for it at the end of the day. Where Bato is like this weird robot guy who only has his job. And the closest thing to children he has, the Tachikomas, are essentially taken away from him in that episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the plot line with the Tachikomas is, I think it's a bit of a throwback and how you fit in the... Because with the whole notion of advancing computations, there's always the question of, well, when does a program become a person?
Yeah.
And the answer to me is never. A sorting algorithm will never become a mind. But in science fiction land, you can ask these questions, and that's more or less a throwback to the what was in the movie, like some security system or something like that had actually started developing, like had been able to start meaningfully self-reference. And that was when they noticed that the Tachikomas had been able to meaningfully self-reference when Bato said, you know, my Tachikoma, come here. And instantly the one whose Tachikoma or his Tachikoma zipped out. Like it had developed, it started to develop a sense of self.
Yeah, I definitely loved that episode where Bato's Tachikoma like wakes up in the middle of the night and kind of like goes wandering on its own, and it encounters like the little girl that's looking for her dog.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was a great episode. I liked it.
She puts a dog's leash on it.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. One of the things that like this isn't like very important, but I just thought it was funny. Like, the fucking dog is at an actual graveyard, like where you would bury like your relatives and shit. I'm just thinking, like, if I like say like my grandma died or something, and I got her buried. And like some fucker buried his fucking dog next to her, I'd be kind of pissed off.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the Japs, I don't think they actually bury. They just cremate people, but they have like a plot of land that's a cemetery or something.
It was, I think it, there were like crosses there, so I guess it was like a Christian thing. I don't know. It was interesting. One of the things I wonder is that I think us being Christians, I wonder if that kind of makes this weird to us. Like a lot of the weird spiritual shit, like, oh, robots can be people. Like maybe that plays better to a Japanese audience, but
yeah, almost assuredly. The animism of Japanese Shinto probably plays a lot into this, so it's more or less a natural fit with things like this, like animals or like non-sapient objects becoming more or less alive and growing a spirit. It's basically just another way of explaining that.
Yeah, I mean, the Japs have like actual folklore about inanimate objects gaining sentience. What do they call them? Like Tsukumogami, where something that has existed for 100 years becomes like sentient.
Yeah, there's that plays into a lot of manga that do that. The one that's coming to mind right now is Bimbo Gamiga, where you have object spirits. Like if you pour enough love and energy into something, eventually it will grow a consciousness and like grow its own spirit, which obviously is very weird. So it's one of those things. The reason they explore this topic so often is because it's something that they've already dealt with conceptually and has been a part of their culture for just about forever.
Does that mean in 100 years they're gonna have like haunted own holes in Japan?
Presumably.
Holy shit!
Imagine
I read the manga with exactly that plot.
Are you serious?
Yes.
That's hilarious. Oh my god!
That's surprisingly wholesome for the subject matter.
That's great. Yeah, another thing is the transhumanist aspect, which I don't know how to feel about that from, like, a Christian perspective. I think that it really is a weird area, because I think that... Go ahead.
It doesn't really matter. What distinguishes a person from other creatures is the Imago Dei, the image of God. There are a bunch of different theories on this. My personal opinion is that as a human soul, you intrinsically bear the image of God. You are his vexilla bearer in the material realm.
Yeah.
So as long as the soul continues to reside, you are de facto human and bear the Imago Dei. But it's like it depends on where you want the cutoff point to be conceptually. So it's like, okay, how many prosthetics do you need to no longer be a human? That's a pretty decent question. Yeah. Do you become a human when you lose like body parts? Well, obviously not. Do you lose humanity when you have prosthetics on? I mean, I wear glasses, which is technically a kind of prosthetic.
Fucking robot.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Full ride geek. So that's the question. It's also a question of whether or not you can transfer your consciousness into a computer, and would your soul come with your consciousness? That's another question entirely. I don't think that's the case. Like, even if you could replicate human consciousness, I think you would essentially just have a copy of your mind, and then your soul would no longer be there. So you wouldn't, effectively, you wouldn't have an Imago Dei bearing person. You would have a philosophical person, but not something that bears the image of God.
Yeah, I think.
In other words, there wouldn't be a ghost in the shell.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on what you consider the ghost. So if you consider the ghost to be consciousness, then yeah, that would be a ghost in the shell, but it wouldn't be a soul.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think use it in the show is essentially comes down to almost being the soul.
Yeah, they conflate the soul and the mind.
Yeah.
I think we discussed this to some extent on when we discussed the movie, but it's worth discussing again. Miles, in your opinion, is there, in a normal human, is there any meaningful distinction between consciousness and soul?
Well, the Bible distinguishes between the three, spirit, soul, and then body or physiology. So I would assume that, so you have your body, and that's, your body can operate on its own at the level of DNA and metabolism, et cetera. So you have bodies that don't necessarily have animating spirits, things like bacteria and bugs and things like that. Really, really simple organisms that basically just work according to their programming. And then you have spirited animals. So things like higher mammals, dogs, cats, things that have like personalities to them. Like they can kind of tell what's going on. And there's obviously different levels of that. And then humans, you have fully embodied spirits. So we have conscious minds, and then the soul is probably something that's specially implanted by God that allows us to, that we just have as a nature of our humanity. So that's the trifurcation that Paul describes.
So for the sake of interest, does a brain dead body have a soul?
Yes.
Like, the thing I'm wondering in regards to, like, cybernetics and the kind of stuff Ghost in the Shell deals with. I mean, if you worked in sort of through the kind of, like, you know, ship of Theseus process where you progressively replace parts, I mean, would the soul be lost, like, for a human?
That is a very good question. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I'm a when it comes to the mind body question, I'm a supernaturalist dualist. So I hold the mind to be a supernatural aspect, not just the not merely the emergent properties of brain activity.
Yeah.
But assuming it is, that doesn't form any conflict necessarily with Christian theology or even theism in general. So that's the question. Like, if you could ship of Theseus it and then replicate, like, or even if you could just replicate the a person's, like, if you had a big enough computer and you did enough brain scans and you connected everything in just the right way and you managed to copy someone's personality, and both of you presumably could exist at the same time, just one is a copy of the other, one would have a soul and then the other presumably would not.
I mean, it's interesting to think about what it would mean for that person.
Having a copy of themselves?
Well, no, but essentially being a creature that possesses like a spirit and a body, but not a soul.
Yeah.
And like enough intelligence to be on a human level. What would that sort of creature think like and act like?
Yeah, it does make you wonder.
Hmm.
And those are some of the questions that get asked in Ghost in the Shell, but they get asked through a very orientalist perspective. So it's almost...
It would probably want some natural world.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So it comes out as a very materialist thing. Like, there's no... And unfortunately, at least in terms of Christianity, there's really no... We don't have any information on that. We have no way to parse that information, so... I mean, it's worth thinking about, but what kind of conclusion can you come to?
I mean, I'd like to think they'd be a nice individual.
Well, I mean, them being nice or mean, that's a different question than what we're asking. Yeah, it turns out people without souls are just all jerks.
So that raises another interesting person's question. I mean, could a person without a soul turn to Christ?
That's the question. I don't know.
Presumably they could, but it wouldn't work.
Well, I don't think that someone without a soul could.
Would they be judged for their sin? Well, there's two separate questions. There's the relationship with Christ, and then there's a mere ascent. Obviously, there's a lot of baggage that comes with mere ascent. So mere ascent, but saying, okay, yeah, Jesus Christ died for my sins, and I still reject that. Like that doesn't happen. Is it logically possible? Sure, it is, but. Why would that ever be the case, ever?
Yeah, that's another separate question. Would a thinking living creature created by humans possess sin? That'd be
Would it have the capacity to be judged for its sins? Presumably, as long as it's a free creature, I guess, yeah, it could be judged for its sins. But would it be like, would it be resurrected on the day of the Lord and then be judged? That's an entirely different question. And to that, I gotta say, I don't know. Or is it that anything that develops a mind has a soul intrinsically? You know what I mean?
Or could God simply sort of intercede at the moment of creation and give it its own soul, like machine soul or whatever?
Yeah, implant a soul in it. Effectively, you have a new species being developed. You know,
it's interesting stuff to think about, but there's no real answers on it because it's just not something Christianity deals with.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's also one of those things. It's like you're talking about, like, so let's talk about the coolant system of like the hyperdrive. You know what I mean? We're so far off, and it may not even be possible.
Yep.
Like, as sorting algorithms become more and more advanced, they just sort things faster and faster and faster. There's really no reason to necessarily believe that you'll have the emergence of a mind. Now, you could probably have something emerging that's like animalistic, but the ability to meaningfully self-reference and be about things, that is an entirely different question. And yeah. I don't think that's the case.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As much as,
my
like...
opinion, go ahead, Joe.
No, go on.
Yeah, I was going to say, in my opinion, what we'd probably end up with is something like a virtual intelligence instead of an artificial one, where we have written something that's clever enough to trick you into thinking it's actually having a conversation with you.
Yeah, but it can't it can't meaningfully say, I'm really bored with this conversation, and like mean something by it.
Yeah, it would be more like a conversational interface, you know. Yeah.
That's kind of what happened in, I think it was the third episode of Standalone Complex, where that one guy ran away with his like android GF.
Yeah.
Like, I might be remembering wrong, but I don't think that android actually had artificial intelligence. It was just like
no
spouting shit from a movie, or I don't know.
Yeah,
I got a very question. Similar. Could Frigbot ever get a soul?
No.
Frig.
Aww.
I can't not have yet. A soul. Because I'm too in love with Emoto.
No, I don't know. Not unless Frigbot gets an Emoto.
Frigbot is split off from Frig Prime. It inherits my soul.
What is going on right now?
Fuck you, bigots. #
Aww.
I meant Frig Prime Soul.
Chucks fucking sucked. All right, so we should probably talk about the show a little bit more. So the plot to season one, I think, was a lot better than the plot to season two. It really is a nice breath of fresh air to see something a lot more mundane going on than the country is in danger or the world is in danger. We have to stop it now or we're all going to die. Which is part of the reason why I really liked Metal Gear Solid 5. It showed a lot of the more mundane aspects of managing a private military company. So in the first season, you have the big plot is that there's a bunch of micro machine manufacturing corporations who have the help of the United States, the Japanese government, to treat some sort of weird thing that happens sometimes with cyberization. And it's really, really expensive. And so, of course, all of these companies are making tons and tons of money and kicking that back up to the Japanese government. And one of the things that our listeners need to realize is that corruption is just the way things are in Asia. It's literally expected. If you are not corrupt, there's something wrong with you.
Well, I think it goes everywhere, really.
Well, in white land, we like to pretend it's not the case, even though there's a sense of shame and slinking about in the shadows to it. So you like to pretend it doesn't happen, and you kind of try not to, but in Japan, it's just like, nope, it's totally the way things are. As long as you don't screw with too many people, you're going to be okay. But this is one of those times where it got out of hand, and they decided to screw over people. So what they did is they created this thing, and then during trials for this, they discovered a different method of, like, a really, like, take it twice as much aspirin and you're good. You know what I mean? That easy. Method of treating the same disease. They suppressed this information and colluded with the media and the Japanese government in order to continue these more expensive treatments. Like, imagine if, like, pouring coffee up your ass actually did cure cancer. And imagine all of the drug treatment companies getting together with the United States government to suppress all of this information, kill off or arrest or somehow sideline anyone who starts talking about like cheap, effective treatments for cancer, et cetera, et cetera, and so forth.
Well, this is a very real thing, too.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Not even just for, like, medical stuff, but even mundane, like, consumer products.
Yeah.
If the company, better options out there.
Yeah, they're pay to play.
A great example is...
this nigga the example using suppositories.
The example I always like to use, which is kind of a... unimportant, but I think gets the point across, is Kodak had... digital cameras ready. They were pretty rough, but they were basically ready in around the 70s or 80s, but film was making so much money, so why would they get something new? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the sort of thing that goes on, it's like, it's not anything out of the ordinary. I guess the scope of it might be a little surprising, especially to the Japanese who have no interest in politics. Like, there's no such thing as a Japanese Rush Limbaugh. They don't care they don't even care that much. Being involved in politics in Japan is like a really like kind of weird thing. Nobody cares.
Really?
So this kind of embroiling thing it comes out of nowhere, and it really is kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
And it catches everyone by surprise. Like in the United States, like how many black dudes have been found dead in some Democrat bundler's house? They're up to like 4 or 5 by now. They just keep finding dead niggers. Like this guy literally is dead nigger storage.
Yeah.
Like you pull up to his house and it says dead nigger storage right there. And they keep finding dead niggers, presumably all prostitutes.
Yeah.
That this guy just like getting pounded in the ass by and then poisoning. And he hasn't been arrested yet. So we hear stuff like that and we're like, ah, well, of course, he's friends with Hillary Clinton. Why wouldn't he be doing that?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of becoming like that in America at this point, where, like, if you... Not to the same extent, but, like, if you care about politics, you are a weirdo nowadays. Or at least, it's a little different. It's more in the way that if you care, as in, like, you don't like the way things are, that's a problem. That over there, it's just, like... why do you care at all?
Yeah, if you're over here, like, everyone cares about politics, and you have to be rapidly enforcing the status quo.
I wonder if that has to do with politics not really affecting the people as much so negatively over there, or if it's just, like, a cultural thing. Like, over here, like, we have a reason to care, because we're kind of getting fucked over, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well,
Part of that is probably because there's not like a two-party system or multi-party system in Japan. Yeah. Like, it's one party, and there's all kind of like horse trading within the party.
I think the Japanese diet has a number of parties.
Yeah, but the one party that's been in charge for the last however long is the Liberal Democratic Party.
Yep.
Yeah. So the people who, you know, sort of the political games that get played within that party.
None of the parties are advocating for full ethnic replacement.
Yeah.
Well, so it's also a matter...
The actual interesting political stuff is all happening within this one party. And I think it's a lot more difficult to, like, make a scandal out of it or to sort of tar and feather your opponents when the party that controls both the media and has a stranglehold on politics, like, all the bad stuff happens within this one party. So it's harder to take it to make like a sort of a viewer sport thing out of it, because it's all centralized to this one thing.
Well, it's also a matter of like, what are they even talking about over there in Japan? Like, things seem to be fairly well run. I mean, they're having trouble getting people to get loans, which is probably a good thing in the long term, but it's not good for the central bank, I guess, but fuck those kikes. I'm just assuming their central bank is run by Jews, because, you know, they all are.
It's run by Japs who were trained by Jews.
Ah, well, there you go. Jewish golems. But, so, I mean, what kind of policy differences are you even talking about? Like, this is like talking about, I get the feeling that talking about politics in Japan is a lot like talking about politics in the United States circa, like, 1805. Yeah. So you're talking about what? Effective tax rates?
Yeah.
Like, the big thing back in the day, the difference between the left and the right was tariff rates. Like, that's it. How, like, do we want 5 or 7%? And there was a real big fight over that within politics, but nobody cared. So I get now the feeling that politics is a lot of, like, everyone, like, the Japanese politicians, they know what the deal is. They know that, like, okay, we're all, because they have a giant enemy bearing down on them. They have fucking China looking right down the barrel of a gun right at them, and they have for hundreds and hundreds of years. Well, so that tends to probably color their willingness to be shysters to their own.
The big thing is with the way that the Japanese politics work is it's not adversarial politics in the same way that in America you have. The country is completely polarized. You have one side wants full ethnic replacement and the other side wants to go the speed limit with full ethnic replacement. Whereas in Japan, all the parties agree kind of on the central idea, like we have to do whatever's best for the Japanese people.
Yeah, and
well, it's not really the case in other countries with democracies. Well, I mean, it's more like
skim off the top when we can. Yeah, but yeah,
yeah, skim off the top when we can. But you know, it fundamentally, at the end of the day, like they're gonna. The parties in Japan will just disagree on how to best achieve the best outcome for Japan.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, guys. I think the Japanese have to worry about those nasty Iranians.
It's kind of funny.
Going to bomb Iran.
It's kind of funny how like they kind of universally agree that maybe that ain't a good idea.
Excuse me, bigots, they found an Iranian passport in the water. Okay.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah, yeah. The terrorist
suspiciously waterproofed.
Know, yeah, the terrorist like made sure to accidentally, drop his Iranian passport in a waterproof Ziploc bag. Just, oops.
Yeah, right. Why does it smell like shekels and hummus?
Yeah.
Why does this Iranian passport smell like shekels and hummus?
Yeah,
even the guy who owns the boats is like, "Oh, we would like to see some more information about this bombing. We don't buy for 1 minute that it was Iran."
I think he straight up blamed Israel for it.
Well, the best thing is like the thing was supposed to have limpet mines on it. Now they have video of supposedly a boat coming to take the limpet mines off of it, but. There's no evidence, like, how do the limpet mines get on it? Well, usually they would be, like, floating in the water, so if it were to stick to the boat and blow it up, it would be at surface level, except all the holes in the boat are, like, 50 feet off the surface of the water, so they're pretty obviously shot from a drone or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, anytime something goes down with a boat and the United States looking to go to war, don't believe it. It's a false flag, period, end of discussion. I mean, for God's sakes, we went to war because a boat's boiler blew up apropos of nothing. Spanish-American War.
I mean, like, that feel when we didn't go to war over the USS Liberty incident.
Yeah, right.
The one time I needed John Bolton to care about, loss of equipment in life. You know, the one time we needed him to care about it. Or whoever was in charge at that point.
Coming back to the show for something, something I noticed. I watched the dub for once.
Yeah.
Just because I actually really like the dub voice actor for the Major.
Yeah, yeah.
And that one episode where Togusa goes undercover to that hospital where they're like using the autistic kids to generate fucking firewalls or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, one of the kids is voiced by Ty from Digimon, and the other is voiced by Izzy from Digimon. I was like, oh, this is a fucking reunion, huh?
Yeah, right. Well, that's Bandai. They're the Bandai.
Yeah.
Anytime you have Steve Bloom and, Frigg, what's his name? The guy who voiced Togusa.
Crispin Freeman.
Thank you, Crispin Freeman. Yeah, anytime you have those two, it's Bandai. He was in, they've been in a lot of stuff together.
Bandai does, I think they're some of the best at doing dubs out there.
Yeah, well, they've had a reliable stable that they can count on.
Yeah, they're not and they're not burning to the ground like Funimation.
Oh my God, Funimation! Yeah,
we'll talk about that at some point.
Runs a much tighter ship than Funimation. The trouble is Funimation isn't run by business people.
Yeah, yeah. We'll talk about that at some point.
Give Funimation bad reviews. Unsubscribe from Crunchyroll. Resist.
Well, Crunchyroll is just a useless fucking service. GoGoAnime.tv. There you go. All your anime that you want to watch.
They're like not great, but like it. Beats
no, they're not.
Using
but it's better than
Crunchyroll.
Legit. It's better than Crunchyroll.
Don't use Crunchyroll. Or you could just don't use Netflix. Like if you're fucking using, if you're watching Ava on Netflix, you should probably kill yourself.
Oh, with Tranny Shinji?
Is that a thing?
Apparently, the guy who voiced Shinji is non-binary. Yep. Not Spike Spencer, different guy.
Dude, like, the dub for Ava is pretty good. Like, some of the extras are shitty. I mean, alright, I'll say this.
Okay, they're really fucking bad for, like, about 75%. And
yeah,
then I'll last quarter and the movie, they get a bit better.
I'll say that...
I will say that the one commander, what's his name, Fuyutsuki in End of Evangelion, his dub voice is not even trying. Is like, he's supposed to be shocked, and is like, my god, it's an anti-AT field.
Yeah.
Completely monotone.
they should have got back the main cast, at least. Like, Asuka, Shinji, Misato. All those ones are great. The side characters are shit. The dub in this, though, is really good. I don't know. Did anyone else watch it dubbed?
I watched the original dub. I didn't watch the new dub because I don't watch
dubs anymore. I'm talking of Ghost in the Shell.
Oh, yeah, I watched it dubbed. It was really good.
Yeah, it's... I've seen both, and I basically think that the dub is better. Or, not better, I think they're on par with each other.
Well, that's one of
I think
things.
the one aspect where the sub dominates is with the Tachikomas. Because Western voice actors can't pull off the cutesy kid voice to save
it's,
their
it's
life.
Really annoying. There's also a fucking dude, a Digimon voice actor does one of the Tachikomas in one episode. I don't think you saw the episode. There's an episode where they like plan like a revolution or something. There's this one Tachikoma that's like a fucking nerd, and he reads books like faggot. And he's like, I think he's the little sister from the Digimon movie. I can't remember Digimon.
For those of you who watch the Rosin Maiden dub, one of the Tachikomas that pipes up every now and again is Sui Seiseki. For those of you who are around 4chan a long time ago, that's the Desu girl.
Neat.
Yeah.
That's an old meme.
Yeah, right.
Sip. Now, Desu was a good meme.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what did you guys think about, like, the opening quote the Major gives in the first episode? I'll read it out for you guys. Yeah. If you've got a problem with the world, change yourself. If that's a problem, close your eyes, shut your mouth, and live like a hermit. And if that's a problem, she points her gun at the guy's head and then gets interrupted.
I don't know.
That's a very Japanese way of looking at things.
Yeah.
Shikata ga nai, am I right, my fellow Nihonji?
The Major is really hot in there. I think we talked about this. But she's really hot. Her fucking outfit is kind of ridiculous.
She wears a fucking leotard. Dude, like, God,
it's like
God,
a strapless,
God bless.
A strapless leotard.
God damn it. Like, whoever made that decision, God bless you. But like, fucking, like, it looks so stupid.
Like, it's God like, bless whoever is in charge at Section 9 for like allowing that.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing. She's also a lesbian, though. Jessie Lee
lesbian!
I mean, she also is into shodas, though.
God damn it.
She, like, propositions some Taiwanese teenager for sex. Pussies out. What a faggot.
God damn it.
Not because she'd be a lesbian.
I thought we were
then.
Safe from this because Corbo wasn't here.
Yeah.
No, I mean, of course I'm going to mention it.
Yeah, that's in season 2. Season 2 had a lot more, like, one-off episodes, but, yeah, it's just poopy. That episode wasn't that bad, though. What did you guys think of the animation in this?
Yeah, it's pretty alright, except for the opening, where the early 2000s CG did not age well. Like, the opening song is fantastic, but the animation is just fucking horrible.
It's okay.
Yeah, the opening animation actually turned me off of the show there for a long time because I thought that's what the rest of the show was going to be like. Yeah. Turns out, no, not the case. I'm like, oh, it's just, why? For what reason?
The Tachikomas are CGI, and I think the cars are, I think sometimes they're not, sometimes they are, I don't know.
There's a lot of background CGI. Like, you can see that in stuff like, for those of you who have watched, like, Kyoani does it all the time now. They do it really well, though. They mask it really well. But sometimes it'll be like... you'll see it in the background, like a car going around a corner where they just want to add that little extra bit of effort. Yeah. It'll be CGI like 99% of the time.
Wait a minute, Miles Poland praising Kyoani? I can't believe
it. No, that would never happen. Don't be absurd.
Yeah. It's weird, right? Because like the CGI in this is pretty good for the most part. I actually think that CGI in anime is getting worse as time goes on.
Yeah, well, it kind of is.
Well, they're using it less to fill in gaps. They're relying upon it more and more because it is so cheap. It's really, really cheap to do the Tachikomas.
Oh,
because they're so basic.
I'm getting flashbacks to Overlord Season 3 and the army of CGI goblins.
Yeah, that was terrible.
Of an army of CGI skeletons as well.
Yeah. It's never, like, in this, it's noticeable that the Tachikomas are CGI, but it's never bad.
Like, aside from the opening, which looks like a fucking PS2 game.
Yeah.
Actually, that's
they did make a PS2
more of a
game
PS1 game, honestly.
Yeah, it looks like, oh god, you know what it reminds me of?
It looks like the Final Tekken. Fantasy 7 opening.
Dude, you know the Tekken FMV scenes that are like fucking horrific? It's that. That's what it looks like. I think it was Tekken 2 that had the full motion video. It's so creepy. It's like that. It's awful. And that was probably the most expensive fucking thing to animate in this whole show, too. Which is, like, really sad.
Yeah, but to get back to that quote I mentioned, what I find interesting about that is it's sort of the inversion of the Laughing Man's little quote. But I thought I could be just like those deaf mutes. Because it's essentially, he's taking her, or he tried to take her advice, but he couldn't do it.
Yeah, he had to stand up and do something. It's a difference in outlook and philosophy, because you have the... You have the major whose entire role in life is the maintenance of public order. So if people sat down, shut up, or just went away, that would be easier for her. And then you have Laughing Man, who has a moral crusade that he's on, justifiably so, and he can't just sit by and do nothing.
Like, I can't fucking remember the quote because I'm retarded, but...
I thought that I would do is I'd become one of those deaf mutes.
No, Major says to the Laughing Man at the end, a wise man, a dumb man, wants to die for a cause, and I'm like, that's dumb. She's dumb.
Yeah, but it is just her cynical perspective.
Mm. Fucking women.
But it's also New Japan talking to old Japan.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I didn't think of that angle because like,
so I read on some websites, namely TV Tropes, that the whole like show is a criticism of Japanese right-wing mentality. I'm not really sure how
I didn't get that.
In the same way that Gundam is a critique of militarism, like, okay, yeah, sure, whatever. Hey, let's make these this is a giant kick-ass robot. Wow, war is awesome. This is going totally over my head. The whole war is hell bit.
Yeah.
If
that's the point of the show, it's like as big of a fail at like making you dislike something as Starship Troopers the movie.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Like, oh, this is authoritarian and awful, and everyone's like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah, right. Everyone who watches that is like, desire to know more. Like,
yeah, like I know a guy that like watched that as a kid, and he's like, yeah, I'm in the military now.
Yeah, right, because of that movie.
He watched that in G.I. Joe as a kid, and that's what he grew up on.
I thought the point of Gundam was to buy those model kits.
Yeah, that too.
That too, but the one of the central aspects of the Gundam universe is that war is hell. Same thing with Metal Gear. I mean, how many people join the... it's more than one, I guarantee you, join the military because of Metal Gear. Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Section 9 is... You know, if it's supposed to be, like, a critique of right-wing militarism, if you look at all the stuff we have to, like, deal with as, like, a covert police unit, like, what are you supposed to do without that militarism?
Yeah,
like,
right. Also,
how are you supposed to deal with these problems?
Yeah, they're also killing like retarded communists and shit like that. Like, they're killing scumbags.
Yeah.
Oh god, look at how awful this is. They're killing all the scum. Maybe it's like, I don't know how many of you guys listen to Little Wars, but they did an episode on Stigmata, I think it was, some shitty leftist RPG. but they're describing this dystopian hellhole, and I'm like, oh my god, this sounds amazing. I will kill anyone who gets in the way of this with my bare fucking hands. Like, go out and you should go out and buy a boat, and women, you should make sure your husband has dinner ready, and, you know, make sure you're only working 40 hours a week and drink in moderation, and, you know, take the boat out for a ride, and that's the hellhole you want to live in. And I'm like, yes, that is the hellhole I want to live in. That sounds amazing. Please let me kill you if you want to get in the way of that. I will murder you right the fuck now.
Hellhole where men are fortunate and
yeah, when you can support a family on a single income.
Yeah, and have a boat. Like, boats are fucking expensive as shit.
Yeah, even the little rinky-dink aluminum ones, they're not cheap. So it's like, oh my god, where I can afford a house and an income and take my wife shopping on the week? Holy shit, that sounds amazing! That's better than I have now!
Amazing! Amazing!
Yeah, amazing.
That's amazing!
Yeah, that episode with a communist was interesting because she starts the episode by saying, like, the Marx quote, there's a specter over Europe. But she ends it with, and the specter is capitalism. And her whole arc is like, she shoots people with this shotgun which shoots money. And she's going to murder this really, really rich guy. And at the end of the episode, when she gets there, the rich guy has been dead all along, and it's just software that's been making money for him.
Yeah.
Like, that's sort of an interesting critique of communism, in that this is an ideology that's irrelevant. Like, in the way that Marx formulated it, capitalism has surpassed, like, its entire framing to the point where it's like an anachronism now.
Yeah. Well, it was anachronistic at the time. The conditions that Marx was describing when he wrote Das Kapital in the Communist Manifesto, they had more or less ceased to exist in England. Like, by the time he started calling for the workers' revolution, like, industrialized countries had actually done a pretty good job of expanding on workers' rights, like making sure they had, you know, co-op health insurance, improving the safety and quality of life. Like, they had the big thing was shift work. They had switched over to a lot of factories had shifted over to shift work, and they had started negotiating with labor organizations. So, yeah, even like the whole Marxist critique of these things, it's like you said, it's totally anachronistic.
Yeah, even for
that's
time.
Why I had to move on to cultural Marxism.
Oh, he's dead. What do I do with all these coins?
Make more coins.
Yeah, that was a pretty decent episode.
Yeah. Something that I found interesting, I don't know, it's kind of a. This kind of has to do with the animation and the art style, but what do you think of this show's like kind of prediction of the future? Obviously, it's off, like everything is. It says that like cybernetic stuff started in 2019, but I think the look of it was pretty neat, especially for the time. It's pretty grounded in some ways, like the way the guns work or look. And stuff like that.
Yeah, I like how mundane it all is. Like, it's basically a normal city. It's just more high-tech. And it's not everybody is, like, a cyber guy. It's only the rich people or people look for the military or for some kind of company that lets them have access to this. People are just normal.
Well, most people are cyberized, but cyberized is, like, having
a cyber. It's sort of, like, just their brain or whatever, yeah.
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 I've heard it described as post-cyberpunk. Like, it's not just, you know, fucking extreme social stratification and, like, corporations ruling everything. Mm-hmm. And, like, the biggest sort of thing that separates it from traditional cyberpunk is that, like, the government are the good guys, basically.
Yeah.
When I first watched this show,
it was pitched to me as it's, like, the cyberpunk story. And I was at like a teenage cyberpunk kick at the time. And I was like disappointed with it at first that, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be rooting for the police? Like, how is this even cyberpunk? And when you look at all the cyber stuff and you kind of realize that this is a more accurate depiction of what cyberpunk would be like. In that the people who have access to the cool cyber stuff are actually governments and, you know, police forces and that kind of thing, or corporations with the money. The criminals aren't like sort of anti authoritarian guys. It's more just people trying to get money.
Yeah.
Yeah. The look of it kind of reminded me of the original Deus Ex. Not the sequels, because those just kind of turned it into, like, cartoon. But very grounded, very mundane for the most part. Except for certain areas look very futuristic. Which I like. I like that a lot more than, like, the super, like, sci-fi Star Trek shit.
One of those things. You can't... You have to place... If you're going to do the, like, total sci-fi look, you have to place things a lot further in the future than you think you do. And this does a good job of being, like, it's 2030. Things aren't going to change that much. The buildings that we built 25 years ago are probably still going to be around, even mm-hmm. after, you know, an Earth-ending war or whatever. So it is kind of like... It is kind of like the 2000s, where you have stuff that's been around for a while, but you also, like, the things that are easy to change got changed, and the things that aren't easy to change weren't touched. Like, yeah. They're probably still running a dilapidated subway system with newer cars, you know what I mean? And they just paper over and fix it.
Yeah. I think it makes some things look a little out of place, because some things are, like, super futuristic, like some of the robot stuff. Which is still cool. I like it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think we basically covered everything. I don't know.
There's one thing I would still like to bring up.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
In the first episode, there's a guy who they state likes to swap bodies with the geishas.
Yeah, that was weird.
Is that like some really next level degeneracy? Like, because aren't those geishas essentially fuckbots?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, that's some, like, free charter right there.
Yeah, yeah. I think it wouldn't be, like, not cyberpunk, but what it's going for. There wasn't some degeneracy there. The future is kind of bleak.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it goes to show that people are always going to have their weird kinks.
So, overall, I think everyone liked the show, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Any final things to say?
Watch the show.
Yeah, watch it. It's good.
The dub is good. If you could stomach, unless you're one of the guys who's like, no dubs ever, 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 then don't watch the dub. The sub is okay too.
The Major is hot.
Yeah, yes. Major's hot. Yeah. All right. Corbo is gay. See ya.
Yeah.
Watch the show. Yes. Faggot.
Corbo, here's my Corbo impression. Oh, Major Mommy. Oh, kick me in the nuts, Mommy. Mommy, please piss in my mouth. Oh.
Well, then.
All right. See you later.
Good work.
She's so good, she's so goddess, let's live. Hey guys, what's up? It's Corbo, leader
fucking
of the
leave! Go away!
No, keep this in, keep this in.
Yeah.
No, leave, faggot. Nobody likes
but
you.
But why? But hold on,
you're
I'm
a retard.
My buddies right
leave.
Now.
Corbo, brother of the Joker.
Okay.
Corbo.
Well, anyway, guys, have fun without me.
Yeah, fuck off. Go jump on a grenade, you fucking asshole.
Bro, you wanna play Smash Bros with me later?
Yeah, we'll play Smash later. Oh, fuck. Alright.